Hey family, King Caruso here, your Black History buff. Real quick, before the show starts, I just wanted to let you know that rather than running an ad for some random product, I've decided to bet on myself and use this spot to ask you to join me on Patreon. By joining, you'll help keep the podcast ad light, support the work that I do, and help me build a community away from the algorithms. And guess what? You can join for free. So if that sounds good, head over to Patreon and search for Black History Buff, or just check the link in the description. All right, I'm done. Now, let's jump into today's episode. Hey family, this is King Caruso, your Black History Buff. And today I want to take you on a journey through a story unfolding in Miami-Dade County, one of the most populous areas in Florida, USA. It's a story about pollution, politics, and power. And at its heart lies a fight for environmental justice and the rights of local communities. So what's happening is local leaders are planning to build a massive trash incinerator, one of the largest in America. And surprise, surprise, all the proposed locations are in or near communities of color. Now, you might be wondering, why does this even matter so much? Well, this isn't just about today. This is the latest chapter in a long story of environmental racism, a story that stretches back decades. This isn't just a fight about where to build a trash incinerator. It's about the ongoing battle for respect, dignity, and a healthy environment for communities of color. What's happening in Miami follows a similar pattern. Policies and decisions that repeatedly burden Black and brown communities with environmental hazards. But history shows us something important. When communities stand up and fight back, we can create real change. Before we dig deeper into Miami's incinerator battle, let's take a step back. What exactly is environmental racism? Well, simply put, it's when policies or practices lead to certain communities, usually low income and communities of color, bearing the brunt of environmental hazards. This could be anything from living near toxic waste dumps to having industrial plants pumping out pollutants right into your backyard. And this isn't a new phenomenon. It's deeply rooted in American history. After the abolition of slavery, many Black families settled in areas that were undesirable to white residents. These areas often lacked infrastructure, were prone to flooding, or were close to industrial sites. Then came the 1930s and the era of redlining. Banks and the federal government denied loans to Black families or steered them into specific neighborhoods, which were often located near factories, waste dumps, and other hazardous sites. Fast forward to the 1980s, and we get one of the earliest and most significant cases of environmental racism in the United States: the protest in Warren County, North Carolina. So, Warren County was a rural, predominantly Black community when the state decided to dump toxic PCB-laced soil there. The residents fought back. They organized protests, marched, and even got arrested. And while they didn't stop the landfill from being built, they succeeded in sparking a national movement for environmental justice. That struggle led to the creation of key policies aimed at protecting vulnerable communities from environmental harm. We have another infamous example, which is Cancer Alley, a stretch of land along the Mississippi River with a high concentration of chemical plants. The region's predominantly Black population has long suffered from higher cancer rates due to toxic emissions. So now back to Miami-Dade. The county produces nearly twice the national average of garbage per person, and local leaders say they need a new way to manage all that waste. Their solution? A $1.5 billion incinerator capable of burning up to 4,000 tons of garbage a day. But there's a problem. All the proposed sites are either in or near communities where Black and Hispanic residents live. These are people who already face higher rates of pollution-related health issues like asthma and heart disease. At a September meeting in public, so many residents showed up to protest that the overflow crowd spilled into the atrium. One of these voices was Alicia Moltari, a longtime resident and leader with the Miami-Dade NAACP, and she called it for what it is: environmental and racial injustice. Meanwhile, Miami-Dade's mayor and commissioner say there's no perfect place to put the incinerator. They're trying to balance the need for waste management with the concerns of residents. But history tells us when push comes to shove, it's usually the communities of color that bear the cost. Hey family, I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Yes, this is an ad, but it's an ad for me. I forgot to mention at the start of the episode that along with Patreon, I also have a newsletter that you can join for free. Isn't it refreshing to get an ad for free stuff for once? The newsletter is something I set up to keep in touch with like-minded people who don't love being glued to apps, but still want to keep up to date with what's going on through the good old written word. You know, like our ancestors did back in the 90s. You can find a link to join in the description. Okay, I'm out. Thanks for sticking around. I appreciate you, and please enjoy the rest of the show. So what's the bigger picture here? Florida isn't alone in this struggle. Right the way across the United States, more than 60 municipal solid waste incinerators operate. And while the majority are in white-only communities, the ones near communities of color burn more trash and emit more pollutants. It's a national pattern, and one that speaks to the systemic nature of environmental racism. Let's pause for a moment and reflect. This isn't just a local issue, it's about power, and who has it and who doesn't, and how that shapes the literal environment we live in. Environmental racism isn't only about pollution, it's about whose voices are heard and whose lives are valued. History shows us that these fights can lead to change. For example, in St. James Parish, Louisiana, a predominantly black community successfully halted the construction of a 1.25 billion plastics plant through grassroots activism led by the group Rise St. James. In Uniontown, Alabama, residents filed a civil rights complaint against coal ash dumping, drawing national attention to their plight. And while not all battles result in immediate victories, they show that persistent activism can lead to greater awareness and policy shifts. The question is, what will it take for Miami-Dade residents to get the same recognition and respect? So what can be done? Experts say there are better solutions than building more incinerators. Reducing waste through recycling, composting, repurposing can make a huge difference. And we need to start taking these things seriously because we have a planet literally drowning in trash. Investing in these alternatives could prevent the need for more polluting facilities, but it requires political will, and that's where public pressure comes in. Family, history teaches us that change doesn't come easy, but it is possible when people stand together. Whether it's marching in the streets of Warren County or protesting outside Miami's county offices, it's about pushing back when the systems fail to protect us. So what can we do? Well, we can stay informed, we can support organizations fighting for environmental justice, and most importantly, you can raise your voice. Because when we stand together, we can demand a cleaner, healthier future for all of us. But that's just what I think. What do you think can be done differently? And is the environment even a concern of yours right now? Please let me know what you think in the comments. And as always, if you want to support the work I'm doing, join me on Patreon, where you can get ad-free episodes, learning materials, your name in the end credits, and anything else I can think of to add as much value to your lives as I can. Until next time, stay blessed. Hey, you stay till the end credits, like only the smartest of people do. Listen, if you stuck around this long, you sound like the kind of person who might really enjoy my Patreon. Over there, you'll get access to hundreds of ad-free posts, early access to videos and recordings, bonus content, and whatever else I can think of to add value to your life. And you can join for free. Plus, If you join a paid tier, you'll get your name in the end credits of videos and that warm, fuzzy feeling of knowing that you're helping me make the show bigger and better. You can find me by searching for Black History Buff on Patreon or by using the link in the description. That's it. I'm done. Thank you so much for staying with me, and I hope you'll stick around for more episodes and share them with your friends. Till next time, stay blessed.